Hey, book lovers, if you're a longtime listener of the podcast, you may want to listen up because we've got a couple of new things to tell you about Libro.fm. And if you're new here, we want you to know that Libro.fm is the best place to buy your audiobooks because it allows you to buy from your favorite local and independent bookstore. You can choose from more than 150,000 audiobook titles and get recommendations from booksellers around the country, all for the same price as that other company. You know which one I'm talking about. Except with Libro.fm, you'll be part of a different story, one that supports community. And now, just in time for the holidays, we wanted to let you know that you can also give audiobook memberships to the book lovers in your life. They come in 3, 6, and 12-month durations. Recipients will receive all of their audiobook credits up front, so no waiting each month for a new book. And they will also receive 30% off all additional purchases during the course of their membership. You can check out the link in our show notes for this deal. And as always, listeners of the Bookstore Podcast can get 2 months for the price of one when they use our new promo code, BookstorePod, all one word. That's a new promo code. Don't use the old one. At checkout at Libro.fm. That's Libro.fm. With each listen, take pride in knowing you're supporting local bookstores.
Welcome to the bookstore.
It's like a book club, but we actually read the book.
I'm Becca.
And I'm Corinne. And this week is the first week of our October book prompts. So we have read Baba Yaga Laid an Egg by Dubravka Ugrešić. Okay. So, and Dubravka is she writes in Croatian. She's a Slavic writer. I think for political reasons, she refuses to be called Croatian. Not going to go into that because I don't know enough about it, but that's the story there. And in our October prompt, which is to read a book that is a retelling of a folktale or fairy tale or mythology or something like that. This one clearly is about or a retelling of Baba Yaga. Becca's pick for our next book is...
It is Love in Color by Bolu Babalola. It's a collection of stories, and I believe it's based on like different myths and fairy tales from all over the world, usually with a romantic bent, as far as I believe. Yes.
Both of our picks are available through Hoopla. I believe Becca's is also available as an audiobook through Hoopla. So if you're interested in those, you can check them out there if your library offers that service. And so, yes, I guess we'll talk about Baba Yaga Laid an Egg now.
All right.
So this is from a series by Canongate, which is a Scottish publisher. And they did a series on myths. And I think they kind of... What do you call it when they curated a series of books by different authors, all about different myths and mythologies. So Margaret Atwood's The Penelopeid is part of this series. And there's also a, much to our chagrin, untranslated Olga Tokarczuk book as part of this series. And this one was published in 2009 by Canongate, but it was originally published in Croatian in 2007. So this is an interesting book. It takes a little bit different format. The first section is about a woman who is an author, a Croatian author, and her mother, who is aging and has dementia, and the author kind of attempts to care for her mother, talks about her life and her life now as she's going through dementia. And then also this author goes to Bulgaria and takes up a fan's offer to stay with her in Bulgaria, which is kind of like a very comical turn of events. And she talks about her travels there. So sort of an interesting mix of like a personal sort of travel story for this author and then her mother's story. The second part is about three older women who travel from Zagreb to Prague to stay at a hotel and spa. And these three women are named Beba, Pupa, and Kukla. It kind of follows day by day the things that they get up to there. I think this is most transparently about the myth of Baba Yaga. So that's that section is most obviously kind of like a modern retelling of the themes of the Baba Yaga story. And then the third section, weirdly, is a kind of analysis by the author's fan, who also happens to be a mythologist, I guess, or a person who studies mythologies, a folklorist, I guess you could call her. And she is analyzing the first two parts of the story for their adherence or what have you to the Baba Yaga myths. So that is very heavily like anthropological. And then it takes this kind of postmodern, like metafiction turn. Don't know how successful it is. It's an interesting format for a book.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about it. Anyhow, so where should we start? How did you feel, I guess? Just general feelings.
Well, one thing, I read this as an ebook through Hoopla, and there's a lot of footnotes, including when somebody speaks in a different language, There's a footnote, and there was no way to go to, I say footnotes, but it's not actually a footnote. It goes to like whatever it's called, references in the back of the book.
Yeah. Footnotes in ebooks are always a challenge, yes. I have found in this one, because I read this between my phone and the actual book that I have, And I found the footnotes in this to be maybe the most frustrating in any ebook I've tried to read.
I would say if you can read this as a physical book, it would be one of those that you should read as a physical book, because it does. And it's not that like the footnote references situation, like really I needed that information necessarily, but it does make it kind of like, am I missing something?
Right.
I kind of felt like a little bit disoriented reading it, Because then when we got to the part where it's sort of like where what's her name, Abba is going over the myths of Baba Yaga and the history of that, I was a little bit like, is this part of the book, or is this like just kind of like FYI, you know?
Right.
And again, I think it's all because it was an ebook, so I can't really tell when the epilogue starts or whatnot. But that all being said, it is really interesting. I did like the book. It just was a little bit confusing, especially since while I'm reading it, I'm trying to think of things to say for the podcast. I think if I just like read this totally separate and didn't think I'd have to talk about it, I would have really liked it.
Yeah. I really especially liked the first section of talking. It was, you know, a woman kind of talking about her aging mother. And in general, the whole book is kind of a meditation on aging women specifically. It looks at the myth of the Baba Yaga, which Baba Yaga is, if anybody's listening who doesn't know, is a like Slavic and, you know, I think there's Russian versions of this folktale too. She's a witch who lives in the forest, and she lives in a house that stands on chicken feet. And there's sort of like a million different incarnations of her, but that's kind of like the basic parts. She often flies around in a mortar and with a mortar and pestle. She is in the mortar and she uses the pestle to kind of like row around, and she can either be helpful or she can eat children, you know, kind of one of those deals. So the book is looking at the Baba Yaga as kind of this metaphor for the way that society has always discarded women that they don't think are useful. And I love that as an opportunity to look at people who, and, you know, specifically women that have been pushed aside because they're not beautiful enough, or they're, you know, they don't have their own children, or whatever it happens to be that the society has decided makes her wrong or bad, or she's old.
Yeah, I also liked the first part the best. I thought too, there's some about how her mom is like losing the, I don't want to say the power of speech, but to remember certain words.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that we don't always necessarily focus on when we're thinking about aging.
Mm-hmm.
We sort of think about like losing memories altogether or physical changes. But like something like that, I think just sounds so, I don't want to say scary exactly, but in a way, yes, like it can be like very weird to not be able to say or think of a word that you want to think of. And like, obviously, I think that happens to all of us at some point, you know, you just like can't think of the word you want to say, but to have it be so often and for like everyday items, I think that is a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I mean, the story of like watching somebody go through that is always just like very difficult and like just kind of tragic and sad. And I think it's like universally so, because obviously we're all going to age. Many of us, if we're lucky, we'll have parents who live to an old age. And that's always just kind of a thing that, you know, I mean, maybe it's just me, but at the back of my mind, I'm like constantly sort of thinking about, worrying about having to deal with, not deal with, but you know, live through and help somebody else live through. And so I always find that like just very compelling. And I agree. I don't know. These are all bad words for this, but I thought it was a really interesting way to kind of track those changes within her mom, especially for a writer, like watching the way that her language changed over time and the ways that her mother, in her like limited capacity to continue to communicate, kind of like found ways around it. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, it's something that too, in the very, very beginning of the book, talks about this, about how like as women get older, we become invisible.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I guess I am sort of wondering what that is like, because I don't know that I've ever been visible. So I don't know that like it's going, like, I don't know what they mean by that, I guess, is something that like, because a lot of it tends to focus on like when you're a young, beautiful woman, and like, what if you're a woman who's never been beautiful?
Yeah.
Is that change still there? Not that that really is what the book is talking about, but just something I thought of while reading it.
I think that's interesting. And I also think it's interesting because in a sort of in a way, she addresses that in the second part with Mr. Shaker's daughter. Mm-hmm. So there's this American guy who's like a total like snake oil salesman, selling like these terrible supplements that make people impotent. and his daughter is this kind of chubby and stupid, just like really, really impossibly dumb woman.
Yeah.
But she is like the prize of this one guy's life. Like he's absolutely besotted with her. And I thought that was kind of funny. And the third part calls that out too, that like, generally speaking, in a fairy tale, there is no place for a woman who is like that. But like men get to be like that, and they get to be the prize, and they get to win, even if they are, you know, like kind of gross and dumb. Mm-hmm. They often are allowed to walk away with the prize. And so the book does do that a little bit. But I think you're right. Like, I think in general, there's a lot of talk. It's not the first time I've heard people talk about as you age, as a woman, you become invisible, which probably, like you said, isn't a universal feeling. But it is. It does tend to be the way that in general people talk about aging as a woman.
Yeah, it is. And because I saw some video online recently too, where somebody was talking about, it was an older woman talking about how older women often like dress very extravagantly, lots of colors, you know, like crazy muumuus, things like that, very big jewelry, in an effort to not be invisible. And I think it's just sort of interesting because it just looks at how important that is to us as people to be noticed and to get attention. Not judging anybody, obviously, but it's just something that, like, is this just like a human need to be seen by other humans? Yeah. I don't know.
Definitely. And I couldn't stop thinking too of the way, like, especially when in the third part, which I will say is not my favorite. By the time I got to the third part and I realized it was like 50 pages of basically like a academic style analysis of the book and of folklore all across the world, but like specifically in like Eastern Europe, I appreciated it because I thought it was useful, because there's not actually a lot of information about Baba Yaga beyond like the surface level on the internet. So at first I was like, oh, this is really useful for me. And then I was like, this is not what I want to be reading right now. I kind of want this to be done with.
Yeah.
Grated on me. But there were parts where she talked about and focused a lot on how ugly the Baba Yaga is and generally happens to be. And that is the way that we look at witches too. And I lately have been hyper focused on the way that, like, as a woman, I am always aware of the way that I look. And I often feel guilty about not being interested in looking pretty. And then I also feel just like bad about myself for not being pretty, even though when I'm not thinking about anything about how I look, I am happier than I would ever be. And so I really liked, you know, kind of like the focus on what does it mean when, like, you know, we make ugliness into being bad. Because the book doesn't talk about this necessarily, but like, in a lot of ways, when we're talking about like the ugliness that comes in folklores and in mythology and stuff, like, a lot of that can be attributed to different, like, physical differences that also could be handicaps or disabilities or, you know, like, different stuff like that. And it's very strange the way that, like, we have tied beauty to goodness specifically. And it makes me very mad. I think it makes me more mad than anything else.
Yeah, well, I mean, and this is something we've talked about before, but it's like this idea, if somebody says, like, I am ugly, you know, everybody immediately jumps to say, no, you're not, you're beautiful. And where I would like us to get to is the fact that it doesn't matter whether you're ugly or beautiful. Like, why is it that we have to say, well, you're beautiful on the inside? Like, why does the best thing that you can be have to be using a word that really just means appearance? You know, I mean, even if somebody says, like, oh, well, you're so, you know, you're caring and generosity, that those are beautiful traits, it's still, we're still pulling it back to that same word. And I just think it's odd that so much of it rests on appearance when that is like the one thing we really have nothing to do with, right? Like, I can't, unless I go, of course you can change your appearance, you know?
And I mean, there's not a whole lot that I can think of to talk about with this book, so maybe this is just gonna be like an embarrassing, like, feminism 101 course or whatever, when we don't argue about, but we talk about the virtues or the badness of, like, getting plastic surgery or whatever. But, like, I've been seeing, like, a lot of, because I used to be a photographer. I technically am, but I don't really do photography for money in any capacity any longer. But, like, I know a lot of people who do. And there's this current trend in photography to do, like, empowerment sessions, they call them, that are, like, they tend to be boudoir, and they tend to require you to get your hair and makeup done. And it makes me really mad because, like, I don't want my empowerment, I don't want, like, my idea of my self-worth to be tied to how pretty you can make me look in a still photograph. Like, that makes me so mad. And I just can't stand it. And it's one of the things that, like, has kind of made me pull away from like portrait photography in general. I know that I don't like the way that I look in photographs too. And I think, you know, a lot of people don't like to be photographed because they're worried about what they're going to look like. So I understand that fear, like I definitely do. But I hate the way that in photography, the emphasis is always on making you look as flattering as you can look and making you look beautiful. And then you'll see that you're beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. Like I hate that. It makes me feel gross. So anyway, yeah. That's my big argument. That's my thesis for this episode. It doesn't have that much to do with this book, but but it also does, I think. So,
well, I mean, and okay, before I say what I'm going to say, like, we all do like to look our best. I understand that. I dye my hair. I do change my appearance, like, permanently because I have tattoos. I think you could make an argument that that is the opposite of trying to look good. But, like, to me... so like no judgment, but like how much of it does come back to the male gaze?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Like how much of it is based on current beauty trends? Like you want jeans that make your butt look good. That is a current trend that we have, right? And like that's totally fine to do that. I don't think anybody's like a bad person. I do that too. But is that really what I want to do? And what's really, how is that important, I guess, to just focus on something? Because I'm still looking, what's making me feel good about myself is still what somebody else is telling me that looks good. And it's often based on sexual attraction.
Yeah, and it's often, like, your level of success with it is often based on how much money you can spend. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah. So, yes, I could talk forever about this. yeah, no, I mean, and I, again, it's not like I just walk outside dressed in trash bags. I choose things that make me feel good and, you know, what I think makes me look nice and stuff. Ultimately, that's, like, all you can do. But I really hate trying to decipher, like, am I doing this for myself or am I doing it for somebody else ultimately? But yeah, and I guess to the point of the book, the way that you are successful at that can determine how successful you are in life.
Yeah.
You know, like, being beautiful can get you a lot of opportunities. Being thin can get you more opportunities mm-hmm. than being fat. I mean, thin people get paid more than fat people, you know, yeah. Like all of, yeah, these things do have like real life implications outside of me being like sad about like whether or not I should or shouldn't wear mascara, you know, like,
yeah,
yeah. I like having a book that kind of validates my feeling, which is like, let me be fucking ugly, please.
Yes. And it's something that I think women have. I see it mostly in women friend groups, I guess, that there's this automatic like knee-jerk reaction to where if I say, well, I don't like my nose. Well, but your nose is perfect, but it fits your face. It's just like, let me have my feelings. This is just a feeling. I don't sit around all day and like ruin my life because I don't like my nose. Like it's just a thing about me.
Right.
But yeah, there is this reaction to where it's like, no, you have to feel great about yourself all the time. And if you don't, there's self-care. There is all of these things that you can do to make yourself feel better.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's, you know, on the low end, there's Snapchat filters and higher up, you can get a rhinoplasty. So,
yeah.
I mean, let it just, I don't know. I would like to just be and not have to like poke and prod at all of it all of the time.
Yeah. And I mean, I would like myself to let go of that too. Because anything that I'm saying, it's because I recognize it in myself and I wish I could change more, you know, I mean,
so I stopped shaving my armpits like I don't know, years ago, like, consistently. And so I generally often have hairy armpits. And I don't think this is not something revolutionary. People have been doing this for a long time. But where I live, it is not a norm necessarily, especially in the groups that I now find myself in. Mm-hmm. So, like, I am in a swim class with my baby. And in the city that I live in, I don't necessarily feel self-conscious going out in a tank top and having hairy armpits. Like, that's not that big of a deal. But in this swim class at the YMCA with, like, three other moms who are all from the suburbs around me, which tend to be quite conservative, I don't know how these people fall necessarily, I have found myself going into the pool and being incredibly self-conscious about my hairy armpits, which, like, you don't need a reason to not shave your armpits. Mine happens to be that I get rashes when I do. So, mm-hmm. like, I have a reason not to do it, right? But, like, I find myself more and more, I think especially heightened because of, like, after 2 years of being inside my house mainly, I'm now recognizing, like, all of these things that I've sort of stopped doing. I don't really wear makeup at all anymore. But I felt pretty good about it, except for now that I'm, like, re-entering society and, like, recognizing other people's reactions to me now, mm-hmm. or what I assume are people's reactions to me because I'm self-conscious about it. It's just, I don't know. It's an interesting place to be at. I don't know why I told that whole story.
No, it's kind of similar. Every once in a while, I will hear somebody talk about, like, weight loss. Mm-hmm. And just, again, because of who I'm around, which honestly isn't very many people because, you know, I never leave my house. And the people who I interact with online, it's like not a thing really anymore to
right.
want to be skinny just to be skinny. And so when I'm around sort of normies and somebody will say something, or they will, like, see a picture of somebody and call them, oh, they look chubby in there, it's like, it's kind of shocking because I forget that there's still people out there like that
yeah.
think nothing about kind of saying something like that.
I know. It's bizarre because, yeah, I think in certain internet bubbles, you can get into these, like, very body positive spaces, or at least spaces where people just know better than to comment on other people's bodies. And mm-hmm. it can feel like, oh, we're beyond that now. And then you realize that we're really not. It's just like the 40 people you end up in your internet bubble with.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Anyway. Yeah. I don't know. I like these stories that tend to be about older women just, like, living yeah. their lives in a way, because I want to be able to have that for myself eventually. You know, like, I recognize that my life isn't going to be about aging gracefully or whatever that means.
Yes.
You know, it's going to be about aging the way that I do. So, yeah, I don't know. The second part of the book I thought was kind of fun and funny in a lot of ways. There were parts that were, like, very humorous, specifically when Kukla goes out golfing with Mr. Shaker and she kills him by hitting a golf ball into his throat.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, I liked them as like Baba Yaga, like, in stories often is multiple people all named Baba Yaga. They'll be, like, sisters all named Baba Yaga, which in the third part, again, pointed out that, like, historically women's names didn't really matter because, like, women didn't need to be individuals, which mm-hmm. made me laugh because I think we've had that conversation before too. And you can kind of see that in the way that, like, a lot of names for girls and women are based on the male version of a name, or if you're whatever that one president's wife's name was, your name is literally just Frank.
Yes. Because named after Uncle Frank.
Yeah. But yeah, and so I liked that kind of, like, bringing them to life as three distinct women who are all, you know, kind of part of, like, or who all represent kind of themes of that version of, like, being a woman who has been like sidelined and like reaching the end of your life. And like, you know, they just go out and try to have a good time. But also it's sad because like Babe was thinking about like killing herself.
But
I don't know. Like, I don't know what to say. I just rambled for a very long time.
No, that's okay. I think that part was fun and interesting. And, you know, it ends up nice for everybody, too, mm-hmm. which I did kind of like that it was like a very, very like best, almost best case scenario ending. Mm-hmm. But I did. And so what I appreciated about the last parts where it's talking about the myth of Baba Yaga is when it's showing like the parallels between them. Mm-hmm. I was so confused about why there was an emphasis on Baba's breasts being so big.
Yeah.
It turns out like there's a myth, I think it's like the Serbs or something, about a giant mother who has huge breasts. And like there was all these examples of like these myths of, and I think Baba Yaga was one of them too, kneading bread with her breasts.
Yeah, which, or closing the oven with them.
I absolutely love that. Slinging them over her shoulder. I mean,
I'd love to.
It is. And it is something that, like, I think when I was younger, I would have been like, I was so scared of like having, what if I have saggy boobs when I'm old?
Oh, I know.
And now that I'm getting older, it's like, it's hilarious and it's fine because this is what they do. This is gravity, you
yes.
know?
Yeah, you know, as much as I kind of hated reading the third part, it brings up so many interesting kind of ideas about like the way that we think about women aging, specifically like the fear over like an older woman's sexuality, like the way that the vulva appears in like so many of those stories too, and in folklore and stuff. So yeah, I guess just like it's like reading all of it's just like, God, we're so silly and weird and like puritanical, specifically about like women and women's bodies and the way that like we have to make them grotesque in just because they exist.
There was this one part where they talked kind of about, well, in the book talked about how Baba Yaga sort of represents the switch from a matriarchal culture to a patriarchal one. And it made me think about how, so like the Slavs are like huge. So you mentioned it's like Russian, Ukrainian, Belarus, Poland, all the way like Czech Republic, all the way down to like Serbia, Bulgaria, Bosnia, all of those sort of what we would consider a lot of Eastern and Central Europe.
Right.
And it made me think about how all of the, there was all of these myths and they had their own religion. And then of course they were conquered or what have you, or by Christianity. Mm-hmm. And so we lost a lot of that stuff. And I think it's something that we don't necessarily think about a lot because that was all happened such a long time ago. We tend to focus on more current colonization. Not that we shouldn't. I'm just the facts, you know? And I guess I just didn't think about that is how much have we lost from, for example, this, like you said, there's not a ton of Baba Yaga on the internet about those very old myths because of those like Roman Empire and all that stuff that happened such a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then how, and I don't know anything about the history of the Slavs, but if they were matriarchal and then Christianity, of course, is a patriarchal religion.
Right.
How that switched. And I don't know. It's something that's like, what, like, look at what they took from us, you know?
Yeah. No, I think about that a lot, too. I'm going to try to tread around this in a way that's not like lives matter. Sorry.
Yes.
Hopefully, if you're listening to this, you know how I feel. But I do think about like the fact that like we talk a lot about like the kind of homogenous idea of like white people, but like white people came from ethnic groups, And a lot of that has been lost. And I think that's pretty clear in that, too. You know, I mean, like, there are white indigenous groups all over Europe, but it has been so homogenized because of colonization, too, that, yeah, we have lost a ton of it. And it was really fascinating to read that third part again, even though while I was reading it, I was like, what has this got to do with the book?
Yeah.
to just see, like, the crazy breadth of, like, the way that these myths kind of, like, changed, or how a lot of them were similar but not exactly the same, like, across all of these different groups, like, across mm-hmm. a continent, like, all the way across the continent. It was very interesting to think about. Yeah. And you know, like, the whole idea of, like, studying folklore is you find out what different cultures think are important and what they're afraid of and all sorts of different things. So really fascinating to look at it through specifically the lens of, like, you know, the sort of, like, reviled woman version of it.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing too, because the book kept saying kind of over and over that Baba Yaga exists. She's not all bad. Like, yes, no. She does show up to be an obstacle in a lot of ways, but in other stories, she kind of exists to help the hero or mm-hmm. heroine along the journey. And it just made me think of how there is other mythological beings like that in other cultures. I'm not gonna guess which ones, but I know there is.
Yeah.
As a sort of, like, trickster figure, I think they're usually called, where they're not bad, they're not good, they just kind of exist to mix things up a little bit.
Right.
And how, right. like, we really changed that to make it there's good and there's bad, and everybody yeah. has to go into those groups.
Right.
And I don't know. I just wonder how much has that changed how our societies think and relate to each other?
It's wow. Watch me dive into fascism now. but like, it does make me think about it, the way that things seem to be going with, like, American politics and stuff, like the way that there's only good and bad, there's only two sides, and that kind of, like, comes up again and again throughout history too. But I think that that's an interesting thing that you brought up, made me think about that, just the idea of, like, this kind of, like, loss of an of ambiguity at all,
yeah, of any yeah. nuance, yeah,
right. And I mean, that third part does talk a lot too about, like, sort of the ambiguous sexuality of Baba Yaga, where, like, she is sort of, what do they call it, the phallic matriarch,
yeah.
if you will, which I think is maybe some, like, psychoanalysis version, yeah. which, you know, probably depends on how you feel about Freud, but there are a lot of, like, phallic symbols in her mythology that also exist alongside of the more, what is the opposite of phallic? I don't remember, but yeah, her feminine sexuality. So I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know where to go from there, but I do want to circle back to one yeah, of the yeah, very yeah. beginning stories. And maybe we can end on talking about this. When the author goes to Bulgaria and there's her, like, super fan comes with her, and then she, like, has no way of, like, telling her no, and
yeah, I know,
the fan super fan ends up, like, staying in the hotel room with her. Uh-huh. It's like, I on one hand, I just wanted to be like, just tell her no and go away,
right.
But, like, also, if I were in that position, yes, that lady would absolutely be in the hotel room with me, maybe even in the bed if there was only one bed. Like, I would have had no idea how to stop the train once it started moving.
That whole scenario is just, like, very, like, plane, trains, and automobiles. Like, yeah. They're... She's like, at first she thinks, like, oh, they're going to go to the city, and in the city, the woman is going to visit her cousin or whatever that she said she's been meaning to see for a long time. And then she just doesn't. She's like, oh, yeah, they don't even know I'm here. I haven't seen them. I don't even talk to them.
Yeah.
And she just like follows her around on her business. And it was just like, oh my God, it just like so grating the whole time.
It did. And it also like felt kind of like a horror movie was about to start.
Oh my God, right? Like the way that she like put that greasy stuff on her hair or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so what happened in the, so the author goes to see a specific, what was it? A specific beach or a house?
So her mother was from Bulgaria, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. So her mother was from there. And so her mom had told her, like, go find all of these places that I haven't been able to return to since you were a child or whatever, and just go check on all of them. And so she does, kind of thinking that it's like this very important, like, pilgrimage sort of thing. I think she visits the home that her grandparents had lived in, but it wasn't really there anymore. They had lived kind of like on the grounds of the school because they were the groundskeepers of the school. But then that building was gone, and like nobody there even remembered that building existing ever. And then she goes, she's going to go to that beach, but then it turns out that it wasn't like nice. And then when she speaks to her mom about it, her mom was like, yeah, that beach wasn't all that good back then either. Yeah.
But then the girl or the fan says something about like that she knew. So was she following the author?
Oh, yeah. There was something strange and very scary about that. But I will also say that her name is an anagram for Baba Yaga.
I didn't even realize that.
So the third section,
oh my gosh,
is written by ABBA. ABA. And so she, it's written kind of like as a letter, as a response to this editor who asked her to read the first two sections of this book, which I find interesting because she makes no reference to the fact that she is in the first section of the book at all.
Yeah.
But she signs the letter to it, yours very cordially, Dr. ABBA Bagay, B-A-G-A-Y. A-B-A-B-A-G-A-Y.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That is Baba Yaga, which I figured she was kind of like a Baba Yaga figure, but I didn't really know how she sort of fit into it, except for that, like, the author, the writer of the first section, like the one who goes and has to spend all that time with her, does kind of talk about how she is not a pretty woman.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because she, ABBA, also was like, really nice to the author's mom and like got along great. And it's one of those, like, of course Baba Yaga would like an aging woman near the end of her life, where she would find the author more of a, I don't know, competitor, I guess. Maybe not, that's not the right word, but she would be more like, okay, here's a quest.
Maybe
be smart enough to outsmart
maybe that's
me.
What it was. Yeah, that's a good point, because like in the third part, they do talk about how the Baba Yaga often gives young women impossible tasks to complete. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what her mom sent her on. That was an impossible task to complete, to like go visit all those places. Yeah. The other last thing I wanted to talk about was when Bepa wins all the money at the casino.
Oh, yeah.
It was like so funny because it was all because she couldn't get anybody to change this like 500 whatever note. I don't know what it was, it euros or something, whatever it happens to be. And so she couldn't get anyone to make change from it because they all believed that it was probably forged or whatever. So she goes to a billion banks and she goes to all these different places and no one will do it. And then she's like, well, maybe the casino will. And then she wins like $600,000 at the casino. And she doesn't even realize it.
Because they won't give her change. And so she just keeps playing and wins more money.
Yeah. And she, like, the whole time, she doesn't really even realize that she's won. I think she's playing roulette. And she doesn't even realize she's won because she doesn't really understand how it works. And so she's just like, can I please get my change now? Can I get my change? And they're like, where do you want us to send all of this money? She's like, I'll just take it and cash back to the hotel. And they're like, absolutely, you cannot do that. I kind of love, I loved that as like just a sheer dumb luck thing. There is a point where one of the characters says, they don't say Deus Ex Machina, but like this one character arrives and I can't remember what she calls it. But I like that the book is definitely like, I know. Yeah. You know, like, I know all these things are convenient.
So, yeah. Well, and that's yeah. where it's kind of so over the top. And with the, like, masseuse guy's penis, mm-hmm. it's so over the top. You can tell it's structured like a myth, basically.
Yes.
So,
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I mean, it was an interesting read. Like I said, I wish I had not read it. I mean, yes, it's available on Hoopla. So, like, if there's no other way to get it, you should. It's interesting enough to read it on there. But, like, just the way I read things, I wish I had, like, a physical copy. But, yeah. I mean, overall, as confused as I was, it was really interesting. And I'm glad I read it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Mostly it made me think of other things, which is mm-hmm. why we talked about other things most of the time for this episode. But yeah, you know, if you're doing a read around the world, it's definitely a good way to get Croatia knocked off your list.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for listening to The Bookstore.
If you would like to support the podcast beyond listening, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thebookstore or rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Oh, we have a new patron.
Oh, right. We have
this
two,
is from
I think,
but... a long time ago, so we apologize for taking so long. But this episode is dedicated to you. A new patron, Christy. So, Christy, thank you so much. And this episode is for you.
Yes. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting us. I think we already said how you can support us like Christy has. So you can do that if you want to. And you can find all the ways to contact us, email, social media. All of those relevant links are at thebookstorepodcast.com.
Our next book discussion for October's prompt of read a retelling of a folktale or fairy tale will be Love in Color by Bolu Babalola. You can find it at your local bookstore or library and read along with us. And if you want to check out what other listeners are reading, you can find the Bookstore Challenge 2022 on the Story Graph, and it lists all the prompts, and you can put in what you're reading and see what everybody else is picking too, if you need any ideas.
Yeah. The Bookstore is a production of Awkwardly Social Media, produced by Becca Young and Corinne Keener. Technical and production support is provided by Josh Bourdon and Zach Titus.
And John, if you're out there, thanks for listening.
See you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye.